Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're going to talk with Kevin Reichert, publisher of BallparkDigest.com in a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. Sylvia D'Souza gets it done for Kansas.
5:15 to go. Here's a pass deflected by Silvio. Stolen by Devon. 4-on-2. A lob to Silvio, who soars in like Superman to rock that rim and throw it home. What a finish by Silvio.
He counted for 2 points. And along the way, Kansas beat East Tennessee State 75-63. With that, we bring in Kevin Reichert, publisher, BallparkDigest.com. Kevin, first of all, thanks so much for making time for us today.
You are so welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's get to this proposal that the majors have put together where they would take the minor leagues and knock down 42 franchises, including the vast majority of the New York Penn League. First of all, what were your thoughts when you saw the proposal?
My thought was that it makes some sense from the major league viewpoint to try to compress travel and address facilities in the minor leagues. But my second immediate thought was, boy, this is a really terrible way to handle this situation. And it's, you know, coming into a fight with a cannon, not with a reasonable alternative whatsoever.
There are certain ballparks that I've been to in the New York Penn League, and Auburn and Batavia would be two places right away you'd say, boy, that's not really, and with all due respect, to Major League standard. So, Yeah, I can see what they're talking about there. But then I look at State College, and I know the Cardinals, for example, love State College, but they're a New York Penn League team. When you look at a new facility that a Major League team likes, does it help their chances?
I think in the case of State College, and you know, I've been there, so I know it's actually a gorgeous ballpark. I don't think it's a facility issue as much as a geographic issue. The teams that are surviving out of the New York Penn League don't have nicer ballparks and don't have nicer facilities, but they're more centrally located. And that comes back to the travel issue I mentioned earlier. Part of this proposal calls for a new Mid-Atlantic League to cut down on travel between the Sally and the Midwest leagues. Yep. It calls for reorganization of the AAA League, two of them, into three leagues. And unfortunately, State College right now was looked at for elimination because of location, and that's a sad thing.
All right, who else would fall into that category? What about Williamsport? The majors have played a game there. The facility is okay. The field obviously is top shelf because MLB puts it in. Where do they fall into this?
I think it's also, you know, a line had to be drawn somewhere, and no one was willing to fight for that team, unfortunately. You are seeing some major league teams fighting for some of their affiliates. You saw the Pirates sort of fight for West Virginia, for example.
Yes, great facility.
But, yep. Yes, and that's, you know, not a, it's an okay ballpark. It's, you know, player facility is good. But it's also more centrally located in terms of travel. But one thing I want to stress right now to everyone, this is still a very preliminary proposal. It's not final by any means. And you're seeing the last couple of days a lot of political, you know, bad feedback across the nation. I mean, what other proposals in this day and age do you see that would combine a rather right-wing congressman like Montana's, you know, Gianfrante with Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders? The response has been from one end of the political spectrum to the other against this proposal.
Here's the part that I look at when it comes to this proposal. I think it's important. Major League Baseball is about a $9 billion business. I think that's roughly right in the ballpark, okay? But at the same time, you are struggling right now with the 18 to 49-year-old fan. Now you're going to look at 40 markets where you can grow some grassroots fan base, and you're telling them no thanks.
Right. Absolutely. You look at, you know, if you're in the Northeast, if you're in Vermont, if you're in New Hampshire, you know, your choices are Boston or, you know, Boston. You're going to have to long drive to get to any sort of baseball game. The same thing in Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. You know, Montana's looking to lose all its professional baseball teams. Utah's, which is a fast-growing, prosperous state, would lose three of them. So, you know, this doesn't seem to have much thought put into it in terms of a national game anymore. It's turning into a very regional game, and that's bad news for everyone involved.
All right, I want to get to the negotiation part, and you did bring this up, and I want to expand upon that. I think people have to understand, they care about these teams, that this is the opening salvo in a negotiation, and there's room for compromise. Would that be fair?
That's very fair. See, before the news was broken, we had gotten wind of it before it broke, and it was stressed repeatedly, this is just the opening gambit. Minor League Baseball had not even counter-proposed yet. So in a way, news about this broke kind of prematurely. And, you know, there's been a negotiating committee that's been looking at this for 2 or 3 months, and they're continuing to meet. And the both sides still continue to meet. And you will, you know, there'll be some meetings at the winter meetings. But traditionally, you know, of late, not a lot has happened at the winter meetings. There's going to be owners' meetings before that where there'll be probably more action. But there's all sorts of chatter happening in the background. You know, the minor league, the major league people, several teams are going, wait a minute, this isn't quite what we expected to have happen. And, you know, the minor league people are all going, well, if you come to us with something reasonable, say no more Appy League and no more Pioneer League,
yes,
there would have been a compromise made. You could do away with the rookie leagues, quite honestly, because a lot of teams send their best players to camp leagues now, like the Gulf Coast League or the Arizona League. So, you know, those are very travel-intensive leagues, especially the Pioneer League. And in terms of sharing some costs, yeah, that could have been brought up. But casting this in a very adversarial manner, saying, you know, this is what we're going to do, take it or leave it, was not the best way to begin a round of negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. It also means it's going to be a very, to me, first of all, they took the month of October off negotiating during postseason. So I want people to understand that month, both sides agreed this is not the time to do it. Let's play the postseason, the majors, then get back to work later. But it does bring up to me, Kevin, that it makes San Diego's winter meetings far more interesting and maybe far more adversarial than people would realize.
Well, the irony is that San Diego, and I don't know if you've been, the way San Diego is set up, traditionally the winter meetings are held at a single complex. You'll have major league in one tower, minor league in the other. Well, the way it's set up in San Diego, I'll be there for the minor league stuff and the major league. There's like a half mile between the hotels. There's
That's
no
right.
joint lobby. There's no Peter Gammons greeting everyone at the doors the mayor of the winter meeting. It will be a very San Diego's very unsocial winter meetings, and you know it would have been bad to begin with, and now it'll be even worse because each side will be hunkered down at their own end of the convention center.
I want to say September 15th next year is the deadline for all this. Correct.
It is, although traditionally it's done in advance of the last season of the agreement.
Which is
so
what they're attempting.
A more realistic date they might be shooting for would be, you know, February.
What is part of this, if I recall how this proposal works, the Northwest League would transition to a full season league.
Yes.
What is it about short season where draft choices can get themselves acclimated? Because, I mean, in the New York, because the level of play in the New York Penn League, since they changed the signing rules on draft choices to the Major League Baseball All-Star game as a deadline, the level of play in this league went way up because of that, because the draft choices were playing here. So what is it about short season that they weren't enamored with as a way to break players in?
Well, this is where this is sort of an unreported side of this, and I'm surprised the players aren't raising all holy cane about this, is because part of this involves moving the draft back to August and cutting it out.
Yes, that I do
know. And that means, so if you are playing for Penn State and your season ends with the Big Ten tournament, you'll be done until August. No
right.
summer collegiate ball because you don't have NCAA double, you know, if you're a senior. You have no NCAA eligibility left. So you're sort of on your own until you're drafted. And the plan is for the analytics people then to have first crack at the players at camps in the winter. And then they begin their professional career the next summer. The next full season.
See, and that's illogical because you and I both know they need to play.
Oh, God, yes. This is when they need to, the way to, you know, the analytics people are really good at some things, but at the end of the day, a baseball player needs to play. It's muscle memory. It's repetition. Analytics are great at refining that, but and plus financially, you know, these kids are going to miss out on a year of playing baseball.
Yeah,
the contract won't kick in until the following year.
Here's the other part. Let's go back to the publicity part for a moment. What's really neat about the College World Series? Well, there are a lot of elements that are neat about it. But one of them is X, Y, and Z all got drafted by these teams. Again, positive publicity for the major leagues, even though these guys aren't close to the major leagues yet. To me, this proposal... Yep. The majors need as much positive publicity as possible. They've done that, for example, by going to Williamsport. They've done that by the Field of Dreams game coming up or how they played at the College World Series this year. But they do this, and now you look at 40 small towns in America and tell them, no, we're not going to do it. And then you look at the College World Series, and there's no draft, so there's no fun about saying, hey, the Rangers drafted him. Hey, check this out. The Rays drafted him. Like... Yeah. You lose all that positive publicity.
Oh, exactly. It is great exposure for major league teams to be identified with these young players because people love young players. They love the enthusiasm. They love, you know, the potential. And Major League Baseball has done a great job in terms of reaching out at the College World Series with the draft, with events like Williamsport in the past two summers and with Dyersville, Iowa, next year, and that's going to be wiped out totally. And at a time when Major League Baseball still could use more momentum, I find it kind of sad that, you know, this player development system we were just talking about, that's the Houston plan. Well, you really don't want to be instituting big changes based on what the Houston Astros are pushing at the moment.
No, you don't. Exactly. And not only that, but when you have a push in the analytics department that players beyond the age of 33 don't quite have the place that they had in the majors anymore, that means you need to put more into player development, not less.
Exactly. You know, analytics people think that if they just can apply their methods, they can make a good player out of a mediocre one. And in some cases, it's worked. In some cases, it doesn't. And the veterans, the wily veterans who add to the clubhouse tend to get really lost in the mix. And I think you saw the Washington Nationals make sort of a mockery of that system. The Nationals are not a big analytics team by any stretch.
No.
And they won the World Series. I mean, what bigger endorsement do you need than that?
Well, exactly. Well, the Red Sox won the year before, to be honest with you. Even though they have analytics people there, they didn't really play like an analytics team.
No, they did not. They still, the Red Sox, to their credit, still relied a lot on sort of the wily old scouts, like other teams do. Twins, strong analytic department, still rely on scouts quite a bit. There's room for that in baseball.
I want to say Pat O'Connor is the one that is with minor league baseball.
Mm-hmm.
In order to negotiate, you do need some leverage. What's the minors' leverage in this?
PR campaign. You've seen them be very quiet in a traditional deference to the major league teams. You've seen them be very quiet throughout the whole beginning of this process. I mean, Major League Baseball was leaking all the details, not the minor league people.
Right.
We started a report on this before it broke. Couldn't get minor league people to say peep. They wouldn't say anything at all. But the major league people ended up saying, yeah, this is what we want to do. Here it is. His leverage right now is PR. His leverage right now is working with his owners to approach every congressperson on the face of the earth, every mayor, and say, we need a PR battle to combat this. And traditionally, minor league baseball doesn't do campaigns like this. And so it's sort of a new situation for all involved.
The fact that it's the Astros' proposal, and the Astros are currently in a different realm in deep trouble, in some ways, does that aid the minor league argument? Because it is the Astros' proposal, and right now there's not a lot of tolerance for the Astros.
I think to an extent. I think you got to kind of know a lot about baseball to consider that aspect of it. And on the flip side of it, the Astros also win a lot. So, you know,
people have mixed
images of the team. But it does, within the industry, it doesn't help whatsoever. And in fact, I think there's not really a big taste within Major League Baseball to call this the Houston plan.
Well, I think in the end of this, I think you're going to have a lot of people saying, well, how do we develop people? We're just going to do it at a few levels. And I think that I think in the end, Kevin, I think that's going to play a role in this.
Right. And you've seen this. Baseball sort of has evolved into a two-track player development system anyway.
Sure.
You know, the big bonus players, they're going to get coddled. They're going to get the sixth and seventh chances that the 39th round player isn't going to get.
Right.
And that's understandable. Teams want to protect their investments. But if you look at the players who were drafted in the later rounds, the Mike Piazzas, you know, the Mark Graces, Greg
Boyd. I saw Jose Altuve play against the Spikes at Tri-City with Dallas Keuchel.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Joe Mauer was a first-round draft choice. He began his career in the Appy League with Elizabethton.
Yeah.
The Twins did not coddle him whatsoever. They sent him to rookie league, and look out, Joe Mauer turned out.
So, give me an idea when you think that we'll get a better read on this. Next month at the winter meetings, spring training, when do you think? What's your sense, Kevin?
My sense is people will talk more about it at the winter meetings, so you'll see a lot more coverage of the issue. You will see things kind of quiet down after the winter meetings, because December, everything in baseball kind of quiets down. And then you'll see a lot of fervor about the issue pop up in January when talks continue. And the 2020 season is on everyone's mind, because spring training, of course, starts February 10th with the first players reporting. So January is going to be a real key month.
What's your gut as to how it ends up playing?
I think the league reorganizations will happen. I think 20 or so teams will go away. I do think rookie league teams will go away. But I think other teams on the chopping block will stick around. And then both sides will declare a win.
And I'll make a quick prediction to you. Believe it or not, I think State College survives.
I think so, too. I think New York Penn League, I think politically, at some point, the MLB people are going to say, well, maybe that's not the best idea. Let's raise that to a full season.
Yes. I agree it would expand to a full season. I think the facility's too good, and they've drawn 123,000 in 38 dates on average.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised to see a team or two be cut. You mentioned Auburn. You mentioned Batavia.
Yes.
There's facility issues. There's ownership issues.
Yes.
There are some teams that just don't really need to succeed, and no one's presented viable alternatives for them, at least ones that they've, you know, that have been able to act upon. And so that would not surprise me at all, but I think the league as a whole is going to survive.
I hope.
And you may see fewer games at full season as well. There's one talk Mondays in any full season league. That's been raised.
Yeah. You're right. I think you're right about that. I think your gut is correct on that. They'll be full season but fewer games.
Yeah.
I hope we can call on you several more times before this is all said and done, because you were fabulous. Thanks so much for the information, Kevin.
I really enjoyed this. Thanks so much for having me.
Kevin Reichert, publisher of BallparkDigest.com. Wow. That was a very interesting half hour. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Great time of the year to buy a car, by the way. Awesome sales staff, great product. Service department is just tremendous. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Earlier today, Mason Rudolph met with the media, and I felt, to his credit, showed a grace and poise that is very important in the situation with Myles Garrett.
Thursday night, to say the least, it was an unfortunate situation for everyone involved. I consider it a privilege, not a right, to be part of the NFL, to be part of a first-class organization representing the Rooney family and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I fell short of that expectation last Thursday night. I have no ill will towards Myles Garrett. Great respect for his ability as a player, and I know that if Myles could go back, he would handle the situation differently. As for my involvement last week, there's no acceptable excuse. The bottom line is I should have done a better job keeping my composure in that situation, and it falls short of what I believe it means to be a Pittsburgh Steeler and a member of the NFL.
It's Mason Rudolph. Steeler fan, your thoughts?
Aces. You couldn't ask for him to say anything any better than that. Qualification of a leader. He's putting himself on he's going to put himself on a different shelf when it comes to, being a quality representative of not only the Steelers, but also the National Football League. So striving to be better each and every day, but aren't we all? But that's great he came forward and did that. That would have been really difficult for him to do Thursday night when you're just just barely off the field 10 or 15 minutes just to get your thoughts straight, your composure, your words figured out, because that was just quite the scene last Thursday night, which hopefully none of us will ever see ever again in any type of pro sport or collegiate sport or any level of sport.
Right. I agree with that. I'm wondering if what he said in the end aids Myles Garrett. Because Garrett's already apologized. I mean, he's you've got people that are directly involved in this. Rudolph, Garrett, neither one has dug in. So I wonder if it helps. I don't mean for this season or for the playoffs, but getting back into the fray and playing next year. If it gets Garrett to opening day or not, the fact that everybody's handling this the way they are. I mean, Mike Tomlin said yesterday, he says, I don't know that we did anything to make it happen anyway in the first place. That's why I said we didn't have anything to learn from it. Meanwhile, Freddie Kitchens is backing up Garrett. That's his coach. Understand that. And it should be pointed out that as of right now, Mason Rudolph has not been fined for the incident. As of right now, he has not been fined for this. But the sources are telling ESPN that a fine is expected, and Rudolph did say he would comply with whatever the league hands out. I just find it interesting that Garrett took responsibility for his part of what happened and apologized. Rudolph has taken responsibility for what his part in it is, and it happens to be. In the end, does that aid Myles Garrett getting back to the field sooner? Now, I don't know. I mean, it's predicting what the NFL is going to do is, I mean, what's next? Pass interference is a reviewable penalty? Oh, wait, they already do that. I don't know. You're finding everybody at least conciliatory. People are not digging in. One Browns player is. Kind of feel like Freddie Kitchens is to a point. But you notice what I mentioned this yesterday. You notice what the NFL did. They flexed the game to 1 in the afternoon. They put it with the 1 o'clock bundle.
And you had a very interesting angle on that as to why.
Yeah, they don't want to draw attention to it. By putting it in a national spotlight, boom, now the attention is drawn to it and draws it back to, quote, the brawl. I think that's why they did it. I think they decided to put it in where now the game is regionalized. Mostly in the Cleveland, Pittsburgh markets, just the Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia markets, maybe southwestern New York, which may be more Buffalo anyway than Cleveland. But that's it. I think that's what they want. They don't want it to go beyond that.
And it makes you wonder how long CBS will take talking about that subject during the broadcast then on December 1st.
You know, to be honest with you, they talked about it on Sunday somewhat, obviously. But you notice how they talked about the other topic? You notice how they talked about the Kaepernick thing? They really were, like, no real mood to go against the NFL and the Kaepernick thing.
That was interesting, though. While there I am up in the press box watching the Penn State game, I'm checking the Twitter account, and we're posting game updates on our Steve Jones PSU Twitter on Saturday. And then I come across about the whole relocating of his workout, and it's like, what is going on here? You go from 25 representatives from 25 teams there, yeah. And then it gets whittled down to 8 because he decides to move the practice close to 60 miles away from the Falcons facility. And why you would do that, it's a great facility, but he wanted more transparency.
He wanted it open to the media.
Yeah.
And again, the whole workout thing.
Well, we heard about that so many days ahead of time, and so you can't get that ironed out. Why wait till Saturday morning to contact the Falcons or the NFL? It's like, nope, we're having it somewhere else. So it's like you say you've waited 3 years for this moment, and you want to have it done the right way or the wrong way. Well, you wanted it done his way.
Well, I've personally been to individual workouts. Well, you know what's great about an individual workout? You know, it shows you can throw the ball in a variety of ways. But what's the reality of it? The reality of it is in T-shirts and shorts against no defenders, you can throw the ball. You're not making any decisions under duress. You're not making checks at the line of scrimmage. You're not looking at any film to do this. But you are showing that you can throw the ball with some accuracy, which he did. And again, this is for any individual workout. Great, we're going to watch Kyler Murray work out getting ready for the draft. Bang, 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 bang. Okay. I mean, you know what? Who had a lousy pro day throwing the ball? It was Lamar Jackson. Right now, he's one of the 10 biggest stars in the league. You know, we talk about the combine all the time. They refer to it as the underwear Olympics. Well, that's what these individual workouts are. You know, you've been to it. I was at Christian Hackenberg's workout. Yeah, Sean, he couldn't have thrown the ball any better. I was standing there with Greg Roman, and Greg Roman and I probably talked for an hour. You know, Roman's watching, and Greg was really impressed with what he saw. You know, of course, Greg's now doing a great job in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, the Ravens. But he was with the Bills at the time. And Hackenberg had a tremendous day. But it doesn't tell you how you're gonna play at the next level. Now, obviously, Kaepernick has a track record. And his track record is quite simple. He has great physical gifts, ability to run, really good arm, no question. But what do we say about every player that has longevity in the league, whether it's baseball, basketball, football, it doesn't really matter. You talk about the hitter that goes out there, and in the first 20 games, he hits 400. Then for the next 20 games, you're like, geez, he's only hitting 182. Well, what happened to the kid that came up with a lot of ability? His ability's out there. They don't really know him. He gets off to a great start. And then what happens? You get a book on him. Okay. Now they get a book on you, and you have to fight through it. And this is the part where you have to adjust back. And the ones that have longevity have the ability to adjust. Now let's go to Colin Kaepernick. Jim Harbaugh makes that bold decision, moves Alex Smith to the bench, starts Kaepernick. Kaepernick, to his credit, I think plays brilliantly. He brings an element to the table that people in the league don't have a handle on. He throws it pretty well, and he runs. And the running part, like, holy mackerel, that playoff game with Green Bay, couldn't stop him. 49ers get to the Super Bowl, all right, and fall way behind, then come back, and fall short. Okay. What happens in the offseason? Now everybody has a chance to look at all the tape. So for the first time, the league has a chance to adjust to Colin Kaepernick. And as time goes, they adjust to Colin Kaepernick. To Kaepernick's credit, though, he lands a huge contract. What happens when the quarterback lands a huge contract, Sean? You don't have enough money to pay other people around him. What I refer to as the Russell Wilson factor. When Russell Wilson was a third-round pick of the Seattle Seahawks, because he was a third-round pick and was getting paid third-round money for 4 years, the Seahawks had all this additional revenue around them that they could send in different directions to give them a better team. As great a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers is, he commands so much money, the Packers don't have as much financial flexibility. Russell Wilson now commands so much money, they don't have the financial flexibility. And suddenly Kaepernick, with his contract, the 49ers didn't have the flexibility, and suddenly Kaepernick did not have the tools around him that helped make him a really good player, and more was thrust on his shoulders, and with all due respect, he wasn't good enough to overcome that. Russell Wilson's been good enough to overcome it. Aaron Rodgers has been good enough to keep the Packers relevant. Colin Kaepernick was not. And that's been the big difference. And again, this is the kind of frank conversation that you need to have where you're praising natural gifts, you praise what he's done, but at the same time, realistically, you talk about the adjustments that are made in the game and how well did, when the league adjusted to him, how well did he adjust and what role did his contract play in the dilution of talent in the franchise, because that happens with every franchise when the quarterback gets paid that much. It's just logical conversation. It's not putting him down. It's not putting down any cause he's with or anything like that. It's not putting the league down if along the way, capital F, if he was being blackballed. I don't know. But there's a football component to this that nobody ever talks about. He came out of the gate like the great prospect hitting 400 right away. The league got a book on him. And he didn't adjust well back when they got a book on him. And then because of his contract, let's face it, they offered him the contract and he justifiably accepted it. But it also meant that the 49ers didn't have the financial flexibility to put players around him to help him out. And Kaepernick, unlike a Russell Wilson, unlike an Aaron Rodgers, is not good enough to overcome lesser talent around him compared to what he had when he first began. I think that's a fair analysis. That's from a football point of view. How the NFL feels about him, I cannot judge that. I'm just saying in football, sports is about adjustments. They adjusted to him. He didn't quite adjust all the way back. And then the 49ers didn't have enough around him, and he wasn't good enough to overcome that. Russell Wilson, he's been good enough to overcome it. The big difference. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, your point about him moving the workout for more transparency, I don't blame him one bit. If I were advising him, I'd have told him to do the same thing. Look, move it. Make it so people can get in, see what you're doing. Yeah, because he's got confidence in his own ability. Since he has confidence in his own ability, he wants to show everybody out there. He said, look, I don't need a closed workout. You can see exactly what I'm doing, pro and con. I thought Colin Kaepernick did the right thing.
I think there may have been some out there that didn't know that the media was banned from videoing right. The workout. But but yeah, I mean, you wait 3 years for that, and then you decide to, what, 6-7 hours prior, you call an audible, and it's like, nah, we're going to do it this way, we're going to do it that way. That's just kind of, I think that's just a bad look. I mean, that's your job resume. That's your job interview you're doing right there.
Yeah, but I can understand why he did what he did. I think he wanted to have people say, instead of having quote word leaking out where somebody said, well, he didn't look good. He didn't want that. He wanted people to judge for themselves. And he had confidence in his own ability. And again, you're in an absolutely controlled setting here. You're running the routes on the route tree that you're comfortable with and the whole deal. There's no defensive player in your face. There's no defensive back covering. So, which is a typical, that is a typical workout. That's a typical workout. So that's not, that's not unusual. So you don't like, well, you know, he wasn't that, he wasn't really that good. No, if the word leaks out, you know, if, you know, I think he was worried about that. And because he was worried about that, he did this to open it up.
So 25 teams were going to be there if he was going to have it at the Falcons facility, but then only 8 show up when he decides to relocate. That's what the teams that decided to bag it. I just wonder if they will get access to the videotape. I would think there's probably a way that they'd be able to get access to it just for out of curiosity to see what they missed in person.
Kaepernick's team of individuals is saying there are 2 teams that are interested in him. As I tell the students in my class every time, I said, all you need is one. I said, 500 can reject you, but if there's one that wants you, I said, you've won. So, if there's one out there, doesn't matter if they're 25 showed up or 8 showed up, if one says, you know what, this guy can help us. Now, you can't be stubborn about it, though. And part of it is not being stubborn. If somebody says, we'd like to sign you as a backup quarterback, don't be stubborn. Because every time I turn around, there are backup quarterbacks playing in this league. Nick Foles parlayed into a Super Bowl championship and a contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You just want the opportunity. Once you get the opportunity, then the door sometimes does swing open for you to make the most of it. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Check out Kevin Reichert on the podcast on the minor league baseball situation. Very, very interesting. Cam Miller, Pro Football Focus tomorrow, along with the King.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.